हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
No, this is, we're way past this one. You didn't put a bookmark then. You didn't put the bookmark. We're into the next chapter. So, continuing chapter 2 from the question by the sannyasi about the nature of the soul, and Babaji Maharaj's answer here. The individual soul may be situated in two states of existence. One, the soul's pure state, and two, the soul's state of material bondage. In the pure state, the individual soul is manifested as pure spirit only, free from any contact with inanimate matter. In his pure state, the soul is still atomic. And for this reason, it is possible that he may change his state of existence. Because Lord Krishna is the Supreme Consciousness, he never changes his state of existence. In truth, Lord Krishna is supreme, perfect, pure, and eternal. In the conditioned state, the individual soul is pathetic, broken, and impure.
It says, in pure states also the soul is atomic. It means 1,000 part of the hair? Or?
I guess that's pretty atomic. Because atomic bigger than relation. That, it's not atomic.
Relation with Krishna or naturally?
No, that's just the size.
Size is also atomic.
Yeah, it seems to. It means he may explain it further on. But Krishna is not atomic. He's the Supreme Consciousness. He's the biggest. We're just a small part of consciousness. When this individual soul is in his pure state, his pure nature is manifested. But when the individual soul is in contact with the illusory potency Maya, the soul's pure state is not manifested. Then his illusory nature is perverted. Then his original nature is perverted, and he is impure. Then he does not take shelter of Lord Krishna. Then he is tormented by happiness and sufferings. When he forgets the service of Lord Krishna, the soul finds himself situated in the material world of repeated birth and death. As long as he remains pure, the individual soul retains his original nature. Then he understands that he is servant of Lord Krishna. However, when he comes in contact with the illusory potency Maya, the soul becomes impure. In that condition, the understanding of Lord Krishna's service is diminished. When the soul accepts many different material bodies, one after another, when he is in contact with the illusory potency Maya, the individual soul is covered by a gross body of gross and subtle material elements. First, the soul identifies himself with the subtle material body. Second, he identifies himself with the gross material body. Thirdly, he identifies himself as the subtle and gross bodies mixed together. In this way, the soul's conception of his identity becomes changed. In his pure state, the individual soul is an unalloyed devotee of Lord Krishna. When he identifies himself as the subtle body, the soul thinks of himself as the enjoyer of the fruits of his work. In this way, his conception of himself as a servant of Lord Krishna becomes covered over by his misidentification of himself as the subtle body. When he identifies himself as the gross material body, the soul thinks, I am Brahma, I am Brahmana, I am king, I am poor, I am unhappy, I am defeated by disease and grief, I am a wife, I am a husband. Thus the soul's misidentification with the gross material body is manifested in a great variety of ways. When the soul thus has a false conception of his identity, his original nature becomes perverted. The original nature of the pure soul is pure love. That pure love appears in the subtle material body in a perverted way as material pleasure, suffering, lust, and hatred. That pure love is seen in the gross material body in an even more perverted way as material eating, drinking, and a host of other so-called pleasures derived from contact with inanimate matter. In this way, you can see that the soul's eternal nature is manifested only when the soul is in his pure state of consciousness, pure state of existence. When the soul is situated in material bondage, only the soul's temporary nature is manifested. Thus, the eternal nature of the soul is that the soul is perfect, pure, and eternal. The temporary nature of the soul I will describe in more detail on another day. So he's mentioning here is that the soul in conditioned state, then he identifies with the gross and subtle body. So this identification with the subtle body means he thinks I am the enjoyer. And with the gross body, then he thinks that I am the particular form that body is. You know, I am big or small, or I am human or animal, or I am Brahmana, king, or I am poor, or I am rich, or I am diseased, or I am healthy, like that. And then he says, and then next, he puts the two together. So then you enjoy through being a king, or a Brahmana, or a dog, or a pig, or a rich, or being poor, like this. So they go together, like this. So the subtle body wants to enjoy, the gross body is the means through which it will be done. Like that. So in the pure state, then the natural quality of the soul of affection or love, or that prema, love for Krishna, then that is manifested as love, because he is Krishna's eternal servant. But in the material world, then that becomes perverted as lust. So then his, you know, happiness, his distress, his lust, his, you know, all these different things that it perverts as.
How does the soul in the pure state comes into contact with Maya?
Because tatastha means is in between. So it's, you'll notice it says that the natural position or the original position is that of love for Krishna. That's the natural propensity of the living entity, right?
Yeah.
But the point is, so that's the natural propensity, but the problem is that the soul in the tatastha state hasn't developed it yet. Okay? He's not impure, but he hasn't come to the platform of prema. Tatastha means in between the two. So the natural state is love for Krishna. So that means if they accept that I am a servant, then they move towards Krishna. And then they develop that prema. Right? But if they don't, then they become jealous of Krishna, envious of Krishna, that he is enjoying so much and is happy. Why I can't be like that. Then they're put into contact with the material energy.
Mm-hmm. That means those of us who have never been with Krishna, is that implication?
No, it means one's with Krishna, but one doesn't, it doesn't mean that one has developed one's pure love for Krishna.
Okay. No service relationships.
Means that pure love that would naturally be there. See, it's just like mother has a child, right? It's the natural inclination of the mother to have affection for the child, be worried about the child, care for the child, all these things. Right? That's the natural position. But it may be she doesn't like, you know, because let's say the mother sees the child as an impediment to her sense gratification. Right? She wants to go out and party, she wants to do this, she wants to do that. So the child gets in the way, definitely gets in the way of that. You know? You know, you can't be the beauty queen and be carrying around the baby, you know. So then she may dislike the child. But it's the natural affection for the child that's created the dislike. It's a perversion of the natural affection for the child that is then the opposite. Right? The same quality has to go to the other side. It means like you have the other side of the coin, means it's the same coin. Right? You understand?
How is the quality of affection transformed? You said that the affection for the child,
the natural, that would naturally be there, means it hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
The woman is going along, having a great time, and then one day she notices she's a little fatter than she thinks she should be. Right? And then the doctor tells her she's pregnant. So it should be that there's a natural thing of affection for that child, but she may see it, no, this is going to get in the way. Right? And so then she gets rid of this child. Right? So it should be a natural affection towards, but it becomes perverted into a dislike of the child. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So it means it's just one is the other. It means like attraction and repulsion. Repulsions come from attraction. If there was no attraction, there'd be no repulsion. You understand? It'd be neutral. You understand? It's just the way. See, Krishna doesn't work like this. He's steady because he's male. You understand? The everything else is female. So energy works like that. It works on these contradictory, going from one extreme to the next. You understand? The gopis want to be with Krishna. Krishna comes, they tell him to go away. You understand? So that's just the way energy works. Does that make sense?
What the stage you said is between
So tathasta means it's in the middle. The soul's natural position is love for Krishna. That's the natural position. But it's not manifesting. We become envious of Krishna rather than develop love for Krishna. Envy is not the natural strength. The lust is a perversion of the natural love. Right? It's not the living entity has envy in the heart and so he can choose the envy or choose the love. No, he has love in the heart. The love becomes covered and perverted. And then that becomes the all this lust, anger, greed, like this. You understand? The envy and all that aren't part of aren't inherent of the living entity. Because Satchit Ananda doesn't have those qualities in it at all. Right? But Ananda means relationship with Krishna. That's Ananda. But we see he's having Ananda with the other living entities. In the relationship, Ananda means in a relationship, then living entities are enjoying that situation. But the situation is Krishna is the enjoyer, the living entity is the enjoyed. So the living entity serves Krishna, so that creates Krishna's enjoyment, creates our enjoyment. But what happens is we put ourselves in the position of Krishna, so we switch it. So we figure what would be good is we're the enjoyer, and then we're being served. But in the spiritual world, you won't find that. So then they bring us here to this material world, and then we can try to create create something. So that's why you see the natural thing is service. And the living entity does do that, you know, basically unconsciously, or consciously if there's some, you know, purpose or something like that. But generally you see is the living entity wants to be served in this world. You know? So that's the difficulty.
So how do you describe the nature of the soul in the detachment stage? Because if it's in the spiritual world with Krishna, then the soul is serving Krishna, is loving Krishna.
No, it's not loving yet. No, it's in the position that, see, you, means you have to have the material and the spiritual world together. That will be the position of the Tathasta Shakti. As I mentioned in the beginning, the material world is the place of Tathasta Shakti. Right? The Tathasta Shakti is able to put the soul and the material world together. You understand? Now the material world is completely a separate entity. Right? So then you have to have a situation like that in which the soul is able to see both. You understand? So the point is in Goloka Vrindavan, the soul can't see both. It can only see the spiritual world. And in the material world, you can only see the material world. You don't see the spiritual world. Right? But in the Lord's, like these eternal pastimes in the material world, that is the spiritual world, but it's also in the material world. So one can see both.
Okay.
Like that. So in that position, we can either choose to develop our love for Krishna, and then in this way, then become Nityasiddha. Or we can decide not to, and then we become Nityapada. We come into the material world. Then you become, you know, next life would be Lord Brahma or something. So like that, it's a Tathasta. You make these not small quite so much.
So Tathasta is not the eternal
quantity. Tathasta Shakti is eternal. But the position of the living entity to be Tathasta is not eternal.
So living entity and Tathasta are two independent quantities?
No. The soul is Tathasta Shakti. But the Tathasta Shakti is nature is to love Krishna. Right? Just like we see Durga. She's an eternal servant of Krishna. She has affection for Krishna. And she's the external energy. So why the Tathasta Shakti wouldn't have natural love for Krishna?
I don't understand. Some more explanations.
Means what you're made of is one thing, and what you do is another. Means the residence of the spiritual world means you know so many of your eternal associates, they are internal potency. No, it can be big, but it just shouldn't be so smoky. You know, like these are big. You know, this is a little bit too smoky. A little bit is.
Does it mean that the souls are distributed in three different energies? One, I mean, in the mode of serving Krishna, loving Krishna, and one in the material world, and one in between?
No? Means the one in between is in association of both those who love Krishna and those who don't.
So what's the nature of the souls? Are they envious or?
No, the nature of the soul is love.
Oh, the souls not nature, but what is the condition of that soul? Are they envious of Krishna or?
No, they're not. It's neutral.
They're just neutral.
Tathasta means neutral.
Okay.
Means the Brahma Bhuta platform.
Yeah.
Is neutral. Like the four Kumaras.
Yeah.
They don't dislike Krishna. They don't like Krishna. They're just in between. But their natural position is to love Krishna. So when they come in contact with Krishna, then they develop love for Krishna.
That state is different from the Brahman.
Brahman is how you say it? It is also that the platform of Brahman, but that situation is another thing.
And that's in the Brahman also, don't they say the souls are envious of Krishna?
Means if they've gone there from the, yes, if they're coming up from, if they're Brahma bodies who have elevated themselves to the Brahman, then yes. See, means this is an area that one is not going to understand everything, because the difficulty comes is the conditioned nature means we're trying to deal with time and space. And you're not going to answer this question on the platform of time and space, because the spiritual world cannot be understood in time and space. Right? So therefore the soul is also not going to be understood by time and space. You know? So that's the difficulty with this. That's why that will not help you in any way get out. Just like, let's say you're in a jail, right? And you're in there. And you're in the jail and you want to get out of the jail, so then you're sitting around and discussing with the other people what is the substance that the sink is made out of that's in the jail. You know, or something. It has nothing to do with getting out. You know? Getting out is a matter of understanding. It means we get in because of enviousness. We get out because of love. So the prisoner's got into jail because of performing crimes. He's going to get out by rectifying himself, giving up that criminal mentality, you know, purifying himself, you know, through whatever process, you know, is supposed to go through. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's why this question we don't go too far on, because it's either you understand or you don't. You know, it's not something in between. You know, does that make sense? Like, either, you know, it's like, are you hungry or not? And if you're not sure, it means you don't, you know, nothing to think about. You either know you're not hungry or you're hungry. Right? It's not a matter of, you know, not being sure. You know?
But could, I mean, from this, what explained, could we be sure that we never had any relationship with Krishna, we were serving and then we felt something like some one of the rasas or something like that?
No. First of all, what will be the benefit of the question? I mean, if you get an answer, what will it do for you?
Since we were discussing this
about... No. But yes, but what will it do for you? Then it's just a matter of just knowledge, just to have. But see, there's knowledge that's useful, that purifies us. And this knowledge is useless, because in the spiritual world, knowledge is not what works. It's rasa, right? So, trying to project knowledge into the platform of rasa, you know, mundane knowledge, then it's not going to get anywhere. The natural position of the soul, what is the inherent nature? Just like this. Let's say you go out to a shop. Right? And you have, there is a flashlight on the shelf, a new flashlight in a nice package and everything like that. What is the nature of the flashlight?
To give out light.
Okay. Has that flashlight on the shelf ever given out light?
If it is, okay, no.
So now do you understand your answer? Okay. Right? But that doesn't mean that we don't have a relationship with Krishna. We have a relationship with Krishna. But just we weren't interested to take advantage of it. We were with Krishna. Right? But our natural love for Him then becomes perverted into lust. You understand? Like that, that's the thing. So the whole point is we're with Krishna, we're there, we're in the pastimes, but we decided, as Tathasta, not to take advantage of performing those pastimes. But your position's already there. Right? It's just like you have a child in a family. Now, does the child have a position in the family? And so when they grow up, they'll naturally take that position. The natural position of the son would be to you know, take up the management of the estate and all this and that. But what happens if he doesn't? He decides he wants to do something else. So the natural position is there. That's what should happen. But we decided to rebel. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
See, tathasta means it's an overlap. You know, so the example is given where the water meets the beach. Is it water or is it beach? You understand? It has the qualities of both.
So can we say that tathasta is valid until we are conditioned, once we are back into the spiritual world, and then we are indulged with Ladini Shakti, then tathasta has nothing to do anymore?
No, tathasta is what we are. Mm-hmm. It's just like you have a piece of copper wire. When it's imbued with electricity, does it stop being copper wire?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or iron and fire. When the iron is in the fire, does it stop being iron?
No.
But does it act like iron?
No.
Yeah, it acts like fire.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing, is tathasta shakti is in the fire of the Hladini shakti, so therefore it acts like Hladini.
Mm-hmm.
So it's as good as Hladini. That's why this example is used. Our definition of absolute means iron and fire, because for us that's what it is. Iron and fire. Means those who are internal potency, they're only fire. Right? But we're tathasta, so we're iron in fire. Or we can be iron out of fire. Like that. So therefore, iron and fire is as good as fire. So you just call it fire. You don't call it something else. You know, it's just like, let's say we take a piece of iron straight out of the fire. It's red hot and there's flames coming off of it. And we put it down on something. And then somebody goes over to touch it. And then what are you going to tell them? Watch out, it's a piece of iron.
There's fire in it.
Yeah, they'll say, watch out, it's fire, it's hot.
Mm-hmm. But what happens in the intermediary process when the iron is getting to be warmed up by the fire?
It decides it doesn't want to warm up. They'd like to chill out. Sorry, that was it's an American slang. To chill out means to, you know.
We used to use that a lot in our college days. We used to use that a lot in our college days.
Yeah, it means relax. It's that, you know, don't get too excited, you know. It was a joke because it matched it was a play on words. You don't have that? You don't use that?
Yes, we do.
It plays on words. You have a word and then it has a double meaning. So somebody's thinking in one way and you use it in the other context and then it makes a joke. So that was that. Is that the living entity then decided that it didn't want to take the part of servant and wanted to be enjoyer. So therefore then comes to the material world.
Right. When the living entity starts to want to be a servant, it still has the enjoying tendency and is fighting against it, but it happens automatically because of this tendency. And then it's very, you know, sometimes it's difficult to distinguish. But one is being a servant, one is being enjoyed.
You just look at the servant part. And then enjoying part will just automatically fall into place. Because the living entities in the material world, they're enjoying. They're enjoying more than the living entities here. Here no one's really enjoying. Here enjoyment, the actual definition is when pain goes away. The moment the pain goes away. So enjoyment here means you have a need. And then you endeavor to get that need. So at the moment you get the need, then then you call that moment happiness. Right? It's just like you're very, very hungry. So you find the first few mouthfuls you take, there's some enjoyment. But after a few mouthfuls, there's no enjoyment. You don't even really taste it properly. You only taste the first few bites. That's when you go, wow, this is really nice. After that, it's not. The fuller you get, the less you can taste. You know, you can stick anything in your mouth, and you can tell the difference by texture, but that taste, it doesn't have any taste. You know, when you get full. So it was very short, what you call happiness. You know, for hours you're thinking, yes, you know, this, I'll get something to eat and I'll be really happy. You know? So it's only when the pain goes away we call that pleasure. Because the natural position of the living entity is there's no pain. There's no pain in the spiritual world. So that's the natural position. Does that make sense?
It's transcendental pain.
It's rasa. It's happiness. It's just another form of it. means how you say it? Because we take the broadest form of it. Like you have all the Sancharya Bhavas and all that. So there's 33 different variations on the natural state of happiness. Right? So then it's different ways you can taste it. And so you get these, and so those are temporary. Though the main happiness is always there. So that's the sthayi bhava. And then the sanchari bhavas create all kinds of little variations on those things. Does that make sense? In other words, the point is that we naturally have love for Krishna. That is our position. We're in our position, but we decide to not move forward in that and be progressive. We decide that we want to be the enjoyer, so therefore we move out of that. And so then the process of this sadhana bhakti is to get us back to where we left off. And then from there, progress. Because now we know what the material world is, so we're not going to make that mistake. We give up the enjoying mood. So now we'll just, when we get back to that neutral point, we'll just keep going past it, because neutrality is not our goal. The impersonalist neutrality is their goal. So that's all the farther they can get. And generally they never even get there. And for the devotee, then prema is the goal, so the neutrality stays, they go right through. So therefore it's not even talked about. Like tattvasta is only talked about on the way down. You know? And that we are tattvasta. But it's not talked about on the way up. Right? Because tattvasta means you choose between, you can choose between the spiritual realm and the material realm. But once you've decided, no, I'm choosing the spiritual realm, technically then we're not in the position of tattvasta. We're made out of tattvasta, but we're not in the position of, now we're in the position of where now it's in that, we're then being, in, you know, how you say, imbued with the internal potency. So then, you know, then we're slowly starting to get heated up. You understand? That's why these discussions on, well, how do we have relations, do we do this, do we have all of, they're not important, because those are discussions about tattvasta, which is something for us which is past. Like that. You know? And then if we say, yes, you were in your position, you had love, but if you had love, how can you be envious? So you can't answer that. If we say, no, you were not in that position, we had pure love, but you know, you were moving towards that, then it's kind of, well, if I was never there, why I should go back to it? Why I should take that as my goal? You understand? So therefore, it's a useless discussion. You know, it's a lose-lose discussion.
Could we say it's something like a child's ability? It's there, but it's not. It's there.
It's just like the child's in the womb. It's natural thing is to have affection for the mother, right? You know, so it's always the joke when they, when the egg cracks open and the chicken comes out, if you happen to be there, then you become its mother. It just follows you around and you're the mother. Right? So whatever it sees when it comes out becomes its mother. Right? Yeah? Okay, so that's why traditionally there would be a chicken standing there. You know, that's why the chicken sits on the egg and not someone else, because, you know, chickens are good at relating to baby chickens. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was talking something like, say, the ability to walk in a child. Say something like that. It's there.
Yeah.
It's just... Yeah. We cannot say that the child... it's there, and yet it's unmanageable.
Yeah, yeah. But it has. But it still has to access it.
Okay.
So potential is there, but it has to be taken advantage of.
Possibility, we could say, soul has that.
That's the nature.
That's the nature.
That's the nature, and it only takes a moment to develop. But we didn't develop. See, point is naturally when the soul is just like the four Kumaras, when they. You know, they saw Vishnu and it's nice, right? But when they smelled Tulsi at his lotus feet, then they developed ecstatic symptoms, right? And then they just like that became servants of God. Right? So the thing is so therefore when you see Krishna, the natural thing is to develop love for him. Even, not even seeing, just hearing about him. I mean, it's just those pastimes of like when before Radha and Krishna haven't even met, right? They haven't even seen each other, you know. But they've, you know, different ways they've heard, or they don't know who each other is. So Radharani thinks she's in love with three different boys, which is not a good thing for a girl. Right? A girl should be focused on one person. So she's in love with this person who plays this fabulous flute. Mm-hmm. She's in love with this person she's heard about with all these wonderful qualities. You know? And maybe she's seen him from a distance. And so she's in love with that boy that she saw. She doesn't know they're the same person. Right? So she's just seen from a distance, never interacted with Krishna, never spoke to him, never done anything, and she's totally has that affection. And Krishna is the same. This is called Purva Rag. So it's a technical point in the progress of development of devotional service. It's a very key, it's the turning point between basically for us the spirit souls from being tatasta as to becoming fully under the internal potency. So unless that Purva Raga is developed, then you can't actually enter into the pastimes. So the gopis who were stopped, they were not, they hadn't developed Purva Raga. As though they were in the association of the Nityasiddha gopis, they didn't take advantage of it. Right? Krishna's there, they're all there, but they don't take advantage. They're happy, you know, they're doing their household chores, and the spiritual world's a great place. They're having a nice time. Right? You know, they have their families, and everything is really wonderful. But they haven't developed complete attachment for Krishna. Right? So that's the meaning of the Purva Rag. Is that complete attachment. Are these doors all open all the way through or something? Can you close this one a little bit? Or something, because it's cooler here.
Well, in the example you just mentioned, when Srimati Radharani, she apparently fell in love with three persons. But isn't it that when she first opened her eyes, she saw Krishna, they were both very young. So it looks like they had some interconnection at that time, no?
No, that's always. But the point is that at every moment it's new. It's like they've never seen each other in this
or that. Or they start from scratch each time they have some...
I mean, it's like they've never seen each other. You know, so that's there. And she opened her eyes like that. But then after that, then they're not going to see each other.
Oh, I see.
After that point, they're not going
to see each other.
Hey, there are these pastimes in between, but the point is that these are, their beauty is ever fresh. So then, whatever Krishna's beauty was this moment, the next moment it's more. And naturally, as that increases, and Radharani's increases. So the beauty she has, and Krishna's never seen before. So every time they meet, it's like they've never met before. So in this case, it's this. So they're tasting that taste, so naturally it'll be arranged like that. And when they taste that, when that first meeting, that always has a very special taste, like that. So that's why we see, you know, in the material world also, the first meeting, then it always has some special meaning, like that. And then, you know, subsequent meetings in the material world aren't as exciting as the first, but in the spiritual world, the first meeting is again the first meeting, and again the first meeting. Though they know who each other is, but it's like they've never seen each other. But here it's that they don't even know who each other is.
Yeah.
Like that. So there is that one taste like that. But that taste is always going on, because the pastimes in the material world are always happening. So that taste of that purva rag is always happening. Like that. At the same time, the taste of the pastimes and the taste of all those. Like that, the daily meetings and like that. So therefore, is we see to have developed that prema for Krishna doesn't mean we have to be right in there, you know, standing right next to Krishna and doing some direct personal service for him. From that we fall. No, just that you see, you hear people are talking about Krishna. It's nice, but you know, you're not necessarily attracted. But that attraction you can't remain neutral. Neutrality is not a position that can remain. So it's either you have to be progressing towards Krishna, or you'll naturally fall away from Krishna. You know, so it's either by hearing and seeing we get envious why he's enjoying, we can't enjoy. Or we just remain neutral like that, not caring either way, and then slowly, slowly, just that neutrality will develop into inimicalness. And then naturally the place is the material world. So then will be appear as, you know, Lord Brahma, like that. And so at that time we can become attracted to Krishna, like we see our Lord Brahma is. Or then by the, you know, number of living entities in the material world, it appears that quite a few Lord Brahmas decided to get involved in the material energy.
But are you saying that even in Vrindavan, in the spiritual world, not all souls have developed to the fullest extent? Is that
okay? Let's ask a question like this. Okay, now in the Srimad Bhagavatam, now it's discussing all these different gopis, right? So now some of them have come down, but most of them are coming up. Right? So coming up means what? They haven't developed. Okay?
Yet they're gopis.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we're not talking about either of these. We're talking about in between. So coming up means they've already gone down, then they're coming up. And the ones that are coming down means they've gone from the neutral stage into material world, come back up to that neutral stage. But now they're coming, as we discussed before, with the purpose of developing love for Krishna. So therefore that neutral stage isn't really much, that stage is just part of bhava sadhana. Right? It's just part of the process of moving through the five stages of bhava to prema. Like that. It's not, we don't call it, it's a Brahma-Bhuta platform, but we don't call it, we're not calling it from that kind of stage. We don't talk much about it. You know, that's, you know, it's the liberated platform, it's a perfectional platform, it's the Brahma-Bhuta platform. But that's not what's important. You have to be on that platform to do this work. Just like to go through that, to get to the next room, you have to go through that door. You're not going to go through the wall. So when you in the process, when you're going through the door, when you're in the door frame, we don't stop there and go, I'm liberated from this room. Right? Because your purpose is just to get to the next room. You just walk out of this room to the next, that's all. So you've gone through the doorway. But for the impersonalist, his whole goal is to get stand there in the doorway. You know, looking back into the room and saying, I'm not in the room anymore. He's not looking in the next room. He doesn't care about the next room. He only looks forward to the Brahman so he can, you know, to the Brahman so he can sit there and, you know, looking at the material world and feel happy that he's not there anymore. Does that make sense? Mm. Right. So therefore, atasta means one is in between these two. Not in between these two, actually. It means one's in the position of those who are coming up, but one hasn't made that choice. They've made the choice that they're going to go into the spiritual platform. But they may move more quickly or more slowly, depending upon the individual's nature. But tathasta means is that choice has not been made yet.
Okay. You mean to say even when they choose, it depends how fast they move, depends on them?
Yeah, you see, some of the gopis immediately developed purva rag, attraction to Krishna, so they got the association of the Nityasiddha gopis. So they developed the attraction to Krishna like the Nityasiddhas do. So therefore, when Krishna blew the flute on that night, they all went. Right? They all went. But those that hadn't developed purva rag, they got stuck. Right? They were held back. And then they became purified, then they went later. You know, just that they hadn't set their priorities properly. You know, so Krishna was very important to them, but at the same time, this other things were also important. Right? Their household duties, or this, or that. So therefore, then at this point, they gave them all up. That makes sense?
Yeah. In the spiritual world, everybody is developed the purva.
Yeah, it means if you're in, maybe they've gone past that. Purva rag means the first stages of intense attraction. It means the attraction is complete. So they've gone beyond that. Okay. Like that.
From the position, is it ever possible to retrace back or come back?
Generally, one wouldn't. Say, I couldn't hear the first part.
What is the pathway? Because we always mention about gopis, but the mantra is, we never hear much about them. How they, you know, how someone who is in that swarup is reaching this goal, this situation.
It means we're always hearing about it, but it's just. See, there's the, how you say it? See, there's the expert and there's the enthusiast.
The enthusiast.
Right? The enthusiast, then you see, is, let's say, gets involved in all the little things all around the edges. You know? Someone who's like a master at something just does it. Someone who's an enthusiast, you know, gets all the latest magazines, buys all the gizmos and the gadgets and, you know, knows all the language and all this and that. Maybe they can do it, maybe they can't. You understand? There are people, let's say, who are very expert drivers, and they're racing cars. Right? Then you have the young, you know, punk teenagers, and they get all the magazines about racing cars, and, you know, they put some special carburetor on their car, and, you know, put some special wheels on there, some special tires, and, you know, maybe they have some, you know, special things on their dashboard, or, you know, other things like this, and they talk all stuff about this and that, but they don't do it. You know, now and again they stop at a light and, you know, try to look fast or something, or when, you know, they're on a highway for 1 kilometer to go a little fast, or, you know, but that's it. They're not actually doing it. You understand?
Yes.
But they like to really feel they're doing it all the time. But a race car driver, when he's in the car, he races. And when he's not, when he's at home with the family, he's with his family. And when he's driving the family car down to the shopping mall, he drives just like any normal person drives. You know? You understand? So therefore one has to be able to distinguish between these two, how you say, viewpoints. Is those who are in the position, the nitya siddhas, they just do it. And so, and they tell you just what's the essence. Those who are wanting to be in that position, then they're into all the, they know all the may know all the stories, talk all the jargon, and everything they do is this, that, and all, manjari this, and gopi that, and you know what I'm saying? So then it looks like, yeah, something's happening. Right? The point is what makes the gopis unique to everybody else? Right? If we say as they're feminine, Mother Jashoda is also feminine. She's in parental ras. Right? Right? If it's, well, because the gopis, you know, touch Krishna and kiss Krishna, and Krishna touches their breast, but so this happens with Mother Jashoda also. Mother Jashoda kisses Krishna, and Krishna touches her breast. Right? So all these, you know, so-called trappings of the gopi bhava, it means Mother Jashoda is also doing. Dhanishtha, she's a servant. Right? And she's female. Like the cows are neutrality, they're female. So that's not the thing. So what is it that makes the gopis special? Why does Krishna say, I cannot repay you? What is special about them? It's their surrender. They're the most surrendered. Right? So that's the key. You come to the point of the most surrendered, then the most surrendered then has to be the gopis. Right? And if we're not in the mood of enjoying or wanting to be the prominent person, then naturally that makes for maidservants. Right? But if there's always the mood, I want to do direct service for Krishna, then that's not a maidservant's mood. And there's always so much, well, if we're a maidservant, we'll be able to do direct service, you know. No. It means maidservant is never direct. It may be personal. There may be only Krishna and that particular maidservant in the room, and she's the only one doing something for Krishna, but it's not direct. Understand? We take direct as it's just Krishna and me. But that's just, you know, close. Direct means Radharani Krishna, Mother Jashoda Krishna, Sridham Krishna, Raktap Krishna, Surabhi Krishna. Right? And if you're another elderly gopi, you're following Mother Jashoda. You know, if you're not Sridham, you're another cowherd boy, you are following Sridham or Sudham or Subal. Does that make sense? Okay. So then, therefore, that complete mood of surrender, following in the footsteps of the particular resident of Vrindavan that you're interested in serving. So the key has been given, you know. So the mood of the gopis is that of that, you know, complete surrender in that particular way. Means all the residents of Vrindavan are the most surrendered. But then within that, then the gopis are the most. It's very subtle.
But everybody could choose to be that, is that what you're saying?
Could choose. Generally one naturally fits into the, whatever one's position is. Just like there's a soul's natural position to have love for Krishna, it's a natural to love what is your natural position. Because everybody's satisfied in their position. Mother Yashoda is completely satisfied. She's not lamenting that she's not out at night dancing the rasa dance. Right? She's, you know, in her mind, is, you know, Krishna will get too tired, so it's better he stays at home in bed and gets a good, nice rest. Right? So therefore, for her, rasa dance is not attractive or important. For her, you know. You know, because it's the surrender that's it's seen. Rasa is the service is a medium for this service. See, in the material world, is the thing itself is what's important. I mean, the activity is important because it gets us the thing. But the spiritual world, the importance is the rasa. Understand? Means okay, in the material world, you have a thing. So, what's so special about the thing? What do you do with the thing? Unless there's something, there's some way you can get some rasa out of it. Either the sense is touching the sense of the thing, you know, or it, some interchange, exchange with someone else that will create some rasa based around that thing. Does that make sense? So rasa is the most important. So it's not that I'm right there and I'm the one washing Krishna's feet and drying his feet with my hair. That's just the service. That's the carrier of the actual mood of the gopis. That's surrender. Right? So that's the most essential thing. So if we have that, then the details, that can be expanded. So for many, then they think, you know, yeah, you know, we think about this or think about that. That's the real thing. No, the real thing is to have that mood of surrender. Then thinking about this and that is nice. Narada Muni also thinks about that, but he doesn't have the mood of the gopis. He can also tell you all so many pastimes of the gopis, and he's so impressed with their surrender. Uddhava can also. Right? Like that. So, but that doesn't mean that that's the mood. Sukadeva Goswami is telling all those pastimes. He's a parrot. So he has a different pastime. He appreciates all that. That makes sense? So the real mood is the surrender that they have. Like that. Then the detail is that surrender manifests as such and such thing.
I didn't get the connection, but you said the object and the activity. And how did you link it up with the spiritual?
Okay. Let us say, oh, how do you get, means I was linking it to the point is in this material world is getting the thing is, you know, that proximity with the thing, having the thing is what's important in this world.
Okay.
Right? So then, and what you get from that is the exchange. So it's not the thing that's important. So my point was, is it's the exchange that's important. So the process of getting things or the thing itself is only a medium for exchange. Right, so that's because it's a reflection of the spiritual world. The spiritual world, the important thing is the exchange between Krishna and the devotees.
And what is the thing that you could refer to?
The thing is that you're, you know, within 3 inches of Krishna's foot or his body. You know, and that's what's going to make you happy. No, it's the mood of serving Krishna, and that may be a particular way you want to serve, but that's the next step. You have a mood.
Okay.
And then within that mood, you do something. Yes. But if you only have the things of what you do and not the mood, you understand?
So Krishna should be equally obliged, isn't it?
Krishna should be equally obliged, yes.
That's why he is telling Napale come to gopis and not for Ashoda. He should be like, Ashoda is also important and she is also surrendered in that particular circumstances. Like, if she's not there cooking for him or waiting for him.
That's her service. But it's just the gopis, their services is within the amazing service of Vrindavan and it's unique. So this time you want to push the bookmark. Means he is equal. So if the particular nature of their surrender is more, then he balances that. With them. And then the interaction is perfect. You're talking within the realm of perfect. See, this is the problem. That's why these things are not for general discussion. Right? It's because it's not a matter of material equality and material this and that. You're talking about, means you have, Dwarka is considered perfect. Mathura is more perfect. Vrindavan is most perfect. So within most perfect, then you're making some very subtle distinguishes. They're all the same. They're all dear to Krishna. But within they're all dear, then this is special. So we can't apply our mundane, you know, logic and material things of equality. Where is equality of anything in this world? Right? Let's say there should be equality amongst dogs, okay? Okay, now you have a little puppy dog and you have this big monster dog, right? So they're both dogs, so you should treat them equally. So what does that mean? What does it mean treating the big dog, the Saint Bernard, and the baby Chihuahua? Okay? There's a little baby Chihuahua, a Chihuahua puppy, and there's a, you know, 10-year-old monster Saint Bernard. So they're both dogs, right? So as dogs, we must treat them equally. So what does equality mean? Right? What does equality mean? Right? We get out one can of dog food and then, you know, they each get one can of dog food. Right? Now the Saint Bernard could probably eat 10 and one can would last the Chihuahua puppy 10 days. So what is equality? The Chihuahua has to eat 10 cans of dog food? Or the Saint Bernard has to eat 1/10 of a can? No, equality means is they each get how much they need according to their nature. So therefore the one gets 10 cans, the one gets 1/10 of a can. That's equality. Right? This whole idea is that they must get the same amount. That's not equality, huh?
That's Ishara's coming.
Yeah, everyone according to what they need. Right? Like that. So that's the thing. That's the problem in the modern world is they try to create equality based on who knows what, just somebody's mental speculation. It's not equal. But what does it mean? equal. Right? You have to define what equal means. Because you have equal means there has to be some common point. And then according to that principle, then you apply it. And then within St. Bernard's, maybe one eats 11 cans and another eats 9 cans. You understand? So like that is you're going to... You understand? There's no such thing as the mundane equality does not function. Equality is established by Krishna. Therefore, Krishna has established Ishavashamidam as the Lord has given each and every person. That is there. Because in some ways it's not equal. It's not equal. You know, it doesn't work on one's. But it balances out. Right? Like the wealth of the king and the wealth of the citizen is different. Right? But the amount of anxiety the king has to put up with, the amount of anxiety the common citizen has to put up with is not equal either. Citizen just has to worry about himself or his family. Right? The king has to worry about all the citizens and all their families. Right? So therefore, to take care of all that, create the facility, then he needs more wealth. Right? The local citizen is not expected to do big yagyas. The king is. Who benefits by those yagyas? Of course, the king benefits, but the whole kingdom benefits. Understand? Because when the whole kingdom, when he is religious and does these things, the benefits of it go to the whole kingdom. And the people themselves, they become religious, being inspired by seeing the king. Right? And when you see the sacrifice in its pure form, then you can try to get as close as you can to it. But when you see it in some meager form, then how you know how to engage? Right? So that means the king is putting like unlimited amounts of wealth into his sacrifice. Common citizen doesn't have anywhere near that much wealth. So therefore, he can't say, well, you know, the king's got so much, but he spends so much also. You know, so we can't just take what we like. We have to take what is our duty, and that's assigned by the Lord. And that matches our nature. So we have to be very, very careful when we try to take, you know, non-Vedic equality and place it on beyond Vedic transcendence. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Can you repeat what you last said? It doesn't mean that we take...
said non-Vedic concepts of equality and apply them on the position that's even beyond the Vedic. Mm. You know, in other words, Vrindavan. Mm. Like that. Means it's the source of all Vedic standards. The Vedic culture is actually coming out of Vrindavan. The Vrindavan culture, when you put it into the form of rules and regulations, then that takes on the realm of Dwarka. Like that, because all the same people are there, but it's just now it's through the mood of Vaidhi. Though they're worshipping Krishna, but it's with Vaidhi. So therefore, Vrindavan is even beyond what we know as the Vedic culture. Because there, the Vedic culture serves Krishna. Rather than, it's not the medium It is assisted. Like that. Like in Dwarka, you think of the wealth, by Kunti you think of the wealth and the opulence. Vrindavan, you don't think of the wealth and opulence. Have you ever heard, when there's descriptions of Vaikuntha, like in Bhagavatam it describes Vaikuntha, does it talk about crystal trees with, you know, emerald leaves and ruby fruits? Do you hear of that? No. But in Vrindavan, that's just a common tree. But, you know, it's just a tree. Who cares? You know, it's a nice tree. But Krishna is so much more important. So no one even notices that. The sweetness of Krishna is so great and so attractive. And they're attracted to it so much that they don't even notice the opulence, though it's far beyond Vaikuntha. The opulence of Vaikuntha comes from the Chintamani stone. Chintamani is just the dust of Vrindavan. That means the dust of Vrindavan creates the opulence of Vaikuntha. Right? And so out of this dust, you know, is even greater opulence is manifested. You know what I'm saying? Dust is just dust, right? More important is all the buildings and the trees and the like that. You understand? So that dust, that is what is creating the opulence of Vaikuntha. So you can imagine how much greater is the opulence of Vrindavan. But it's not something anybody, the Vrijavasis, even worry about. It's just a normal thing. The cowsheds are built out of, I think it's emerald columns. The columns that hold up the roofs are just solid emerald. And they've got, Nanda Maharaj has 900,000 cows. So that's a lot of cow shed. I don't remember. I can't remember what the roof is made out of. The shingles are made out of possibly rubies. Maybe ruby shingles. You know, because shingles are generally red. The tiles are generally red. And, like that, so it's just, that's just what you'd make things out of. You know, and they're big, so they're not, you know, small columns, they're big columns. You don't want the cows to break them. You know, so they're big, solid columns. That's just the cow sheds. You know, it's not like, you know, they're doing something extra opulent for the cows, because they were, no, it's just what they build out of. So for them, these opulences aren't, they add to the environment, but they're not the essential point. Well, in Vaikuntha, it's like the opulence itself is like, here's God, you know, so it's natural. Just look at the opulence. You look at this opulence, wow, only God could have this opulence. So it matches very nicely, but in Vrindavan, they don't worry about it. You know, they see, you know, Narayan, four on Narayan, the gopis, and then they just ask him, where's Krishna? You know, they don't stop there and, oh, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and start doing puja. No, they know he's the Supreme Lord. So therefore, definitely being the Supreme Lord and being in everyone's heart and in every atom, between every atom, surely he knows where Krishna is, so we'll ask him. That makes sense? Is that okay? Good. Playing the morning rock. wrong tape. Right? Okay. So then we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'm Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sarvabhita Bhaktivedanta ki jai, Nityananda Gaura ki jai.
Maybe we can give everyone some China.
Why should the souls be conditioned when they all go back to
their
natural position?
Yeah, it means all, everybody in the material world
will
go to the spiritual world.
The material world is not eternal.
The material energy is eternal, but it's manifested temporarily. It manifests, unmanifests, manifests, unmanifests. But the material energy itself is eternal. Material energy is always there. Sometimes it's manifested as this material world, and sometimes it's just in the form of Pradhan.
So once all souls go back to the spiritual world, then it will not manifest again?
No, it means Krishna is unlimitedly expanding, so therefore there's more souls always manifesting. So that means material world will always be here. There will always be souls coming. Story of Janama. His name is Janama and Vasudha. They were sisters.
Uh-huh.
So when Balaram was at their house eating, then I think the two sisters were serving prasada. I'm not sure. I think I had heard that it was already arranged that Balaram would marry Janama. And so he was eating there at the house. They were serving prasad. And while she was serving prasad, then the cloth came off her head, Vasudha.
Okay.
Because she's serving with two hands.
Yeah.
And the cloth came off. So she manifested two more arms, put the cloth back on her head, and then they disappeared. So Balaram, Nityananda noticed that. And then he understood that she was also one of his eternal consorts. So then he married her also. So, you understand?
Yeah.
So this whole kind of movement that the girls shouldn't cover their head because they're not married, then Vasudha, she was covering her head.